is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, producing back in Bristol is Troy Farkas. And Troy, the last time a Washington baseball team played in the World Series, this speech was made in the same year. Give a listen.
So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
That's right, Troy. And what was the context for that speech?
That was our guy, FDR. I believe this was when World War II is going on.
Oh.
Or what? Or,
oh,
or
no.
Well, wait, it's 1933. Oh, no. All right. So the Great Depression, right? Right?
Unbelievable. You had one thing today. this is where it's good to be an old guy, right? Good to be a history major in college. I was wondering if you'd get that one.
I was too. I mean, I'm getting confused with the day which will live in infamy, which is, of course, after Pearl Harbor. So this is, we have nothing to fear because, we're going to have the New Deal and we're going to make all these programs to fix America's economy. Okay.
There you go. Nice recovery by you. Way to go. All right. So that is what happened with the Washington Nationals last night. We'll get to that in a second. Last night, game 3 at Yankee Stadium of the American League Championship Series. You had Gerrit Cole on the mound for the Astros. You had Luis Severino on the mound for the Yankees. And, man, Jose Altuve jumped Severino.
And the first pitch on the way from Severino is a swing and a ball lifted in the air to left center. And this ball is well hit, and it is carrying, and it is gone. Jose Altuve hits one into the bullpen in left center field on the first pitch that he sees from Severino, and the Astros have taken an early lead.
A cement mixer breaking balls. Luis Severino's struggles in the postseason continue. The Astros tacked on to their lead in the top of the second.
1-2 and a breaking ball hammered. Deep right field. Josh Reddick has hit it a mile. Well back into the second deck in right field. And it is 2-0 Houston.
My man Dan Schulman with that call. Now in this game, Gerrit Cole was far less than perfect. A career-high 5 walks. The Yankees had traffic all the time. This is what it sounded like in the bottom of the 5th inning. 2 runners on base, 2 out, Didi Gregorius at the plate.
Here's the first pitch and a swing and a high fly ball to right field. Reddick back. Reddick at the wall. Reddick makes the catch with his back up against the wall. Everybody who knows baseball knows how easily the ball can get out of here to right field, and that one was just short.
In the end, the Yankees did not score off of Gerrit Cole's 7 innings despite all those runners on base. In the top of the 7th inning, the Astros tacked on.
And the 2-1 to Gurriel down and in, and this one will skip off the glove of Sanchez to the backstop, and a run will score. In comes Altuve on the wild pitch. The other runners advance as well, and it's 3-0.
That's right. Gary Sanchez was not able to corral a wild pitch. I really feel like that his offensive struggles now are affecting his defense. In the end, the Astros went 4-1, and I talked with Gerrit Cole on the field after the game.
Describe from your perspective Didi's fly ball to right field.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that. Well, I mean, we know it's short here, and I got the fastball in. I felt like pretty good pitch. The trajectory was right over the second baseman, where he normally would be. We shipped Didi, so I initially wasn't that worried, and then I started to get a little worried when Red was kind of drifting back, but he pulled up, and then the blood flow just kind of relaxed a little bit. Like I said, thank God he didn't pull it more.
Last one, how do you feel about where you guys stand in the series now?
Yeah, there's a long way to go. I mean, I'm proud of the guys tonight. We had a really good offensive approach. We played sharp defense. The bullpen came in and was sharp. We had a long flight yesterday, long day, so it was good to show up today, and we did. And, we're looking forward to tomorrow, whatever the weather may bring. But it's October, man. We got to grind, and it's a long way from over.
Astros manager A.J. Hinch talked about Gerrit Cole.
I think he's the best pitcher in baseball right now. I mean, his competition is right next to him in the clubhouse, and they're certainly good pitcher. I watch what Strasburg's doing. I see what Scherzer's doing. DeGrom in the city. I mean, there's a lot of big names, but obviously I'm biased to my guys, but Garrett is locked in, and to see him do it on the big stage in a playoff game with Big Mac, you know, the magnitude of this game, it was pretty awesome.
Yankees manager Aaron Boone talked about how the game played out.
We weren't able to break through. We weren't able to get that hit tonight to really allow us to be in that game or even grab a lead at some point. So, you know, frustrating, but overall, I thought from a plan standpoint and giving yourselves a really good chance, I thought our guys were able to do that.
The last two games, the Yankees, 16 runners left on base and just 3 runs. During the course of this game, home plate umpire Jeff Nelson was hit by 2 foul balls, 1 on the chin. He had to leave. Kerwin Danley replaced Nelson behind the plate after a 15-minute delay. And moving forward, Mike Everett has been summoned to take over Nelson's spot on the umpiring crew.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
The game of the day in Washington, where Nationals fans have something to celebrate. The Nationals went into the day with a 3-0 lead in this best-of-7 series, and right away they jumped all over the Cardinals.
Hudson fires. Swing and a line drive down the left side, slicing. Fair ball to get into the corner. Around third and in to score is Eaton. Soto cruises into second, and the Nationals lead it 2-0. And a pitch. And here's a swing and a liner. Left field, Ozuna will play it on a bounce. 2 more are coming in. Turner, a 2-run single, and it's 7-0 here in the first.
The legend Boog Sciambi with those calls on ESPN Radio. Patrick Corbin is really good.
Here's a 1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. And Corbin has struck out 10 through 4 innings. Incredible.
The Cardinals did make this game interesting in the top of the 5th.
Here's the 2-0. Swing and a ball drilled. Well struck out towards right center. Robles racing back, and he's going to play that off the wall. In to score is Wong. They're going to send Fowler. Kendrick, the relay throw to the plate. That's too late. In to second is Jose Martinez, and we got a game. It's 7-4 on a 2-run double by Martinez.
But the Nationals stopped the bleeding at that point. Daniel Hudson pitching through an 8th-inning rally by the Cardinals. Here's what it sounded like in the 9th inning.
The 1-1. Swing and a fly ball center field. This ought to do it. Robles under it. Settles under it. Makes the grab. And the Washington Nationals have won the pennant. For the first time ever, Washington, the Nationals, headed to the World Series.
Yeah, and Hembo sent this along on June 1st. The Tigers and Nationals had the same amount of losses this season. And, of course, the Tigers finished 47-114, the worst record of Major League Baseball. And the Washington Nationals are in the World Series. Washington manager Dave Martinez talked about how sweet this moment is, considering the slow start.
If you look at how where we came from, what we had accomplished to get here, I mean, it wasn't easy. I'll be the first to say, you know, I never doubted these guys. I really didn't. All I kept telling myself, hey, stay with them. Stick to the process, stay positive, teach, and as soon as everybody gets healthy, we'll make a run. We'll make a run, and this, you know, we'll get back in this thing. Didn't know how far we'd get back in it, but I really believe that these guys could turn us around right from the get go, and they did. But this right here, to me, tops everything I've ever been through. I mean, I'm so proud of the guys. Honestly, they could have folded, they didn't.
Dave Martinez getting emotional right there. You could hear it in his voice. How cool is this for Ryan Zimmerman, a lifelong National?
Me, the fans, the community, we've kind of grown up together. You know, I was 20 years old when I got here. We were not very good. And the fans, you know, I still talk to season ticket holders now that have been here since RFK. And, you know, we went through those things together right around, you know, 2012 when we made that first push. Things started to change a little bit and the expectations were raised, and you know, we've had some chances and couldn't come through. And I think a lot of those failures kind of taught us and pushed us to get to where we are now. So, you know, I feel like me, the fans, the community are kind of one. And, you know, they deserve this just as much as we do.
Mike Schilt, the manager of a Cardinals team that got absolutely bulldozed in the National League Championship Series, paid tribute to the Nationals.
They beat us.
You know, clearly. Hats off to them. They played really good baseball. They pitched very, very well. Their bats heated up as the series went. They played the game the right way. It's a class group. And like I said, they beat us. And we tip our hat to them and wish them nothing but the best.
The Nationals in the World Series. Let's get to it.
The man.
Swing, a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Sciambi on Baseball Tonight.
Boog Sciambi, the legend, play-by-play man for ESPN. And Boog, tip of the cap to you because you played in this National League Championship Series. You played hurt. I listened to a lot of your broadcasts that you're doing with Jess, and you could tell you guys were fighting it.
Yeah, I mean, it's this time of year, right? We were joking that me, Jess, and Justin Ware, our producer, we're the flu crew. So, you know, it's the type of thing that happens, close quarters, doing it every day, and then trying to figure out, you know, who gave it to who and you know, and then where you got it. And the other thing is, you know, you've got to be a little careful going into the clubhouse because, like, you know, this time of year, I mean, half the players and coaches are sick as well. So it's, yeah, but it was a fun run.
Yeah, and it didn't last long in the National League Championship Series because the Washington Nationals obliterated the Cardinals. It was total domination in your mind. How did this happen?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I did the 2015 NLCS. And this was reminiscent of what the Mets did to the Cubs that year. And actually, it's one of the seven times where a team never had a lead. Or I should say a team never trailed. So, you know, it's one of those deals where I think, look, let's not forget, this is a Cardinal team that wasn't very good offensively. They were 10th in the league in runs per game. They were 9th and on base. And so there's that sort of confluence of events. This is what happens when really elite starting pitching is pitching well and it meets up against a middling to slightly below average offense. And they just dominated them. I mean, it was no contest. And, you know, I did the stat going into the game. You know, the first three games, it probably bumped up a little bit, but you know, big league pitchers this year hit 129. The Cardinals in the first three games of the series were hitting 121. So it was ugly. And then the other part of it that I've harped on throughout the series is, you know, for as much as we talk about the starting pitching and you know, that is the main anchor why they got where they got to. Buster, this is the second best offense in the National League. Like, only the Dodgers scored more runs. And they're not as good as the Astros, but they have an Astros flavor to them in that they were third in the league in slugging, and they were second in the majors in contact rate. And in today's game of baseball, if you can couple contact with power, you got something. You're tough to deal with. So it's a good team, and I would say you don't normally have, back to the Cardinals, you don't normally have teams 10th in runs per game find their way into the league championship series.
No, and those numbers that you referenced, Paul Hembekides forwarded these to us today. Cardinals struck out 36.1% of the time in the series, the highest percentage by any team in any series in postseason history. Washington held the Cardinals to a 130 batting average and a 179 slugging percentage, both the lowest ever by any team in a best-of-seven series. So as we move forward, I mean, first off, you know Ryan Zimmerman. I'm so happy for him. He's such a good guy. And for him to have the opportunity to play in the World Series, Max Scherzer, you know, excited for him. Excited for Strasburg, you know, after all the criticism that he took in the year of the shutdown. And Dave Martinez, you were around those guys. You know, anybody else jump out to you or anybody you want to expound on?
I mean, I think, you know, for all the – And he's starting to get some love, but, you know, Howie Kendrick's had a really nice career. Howie Kendrick's a very good big league player, and he's been a really good big league hitter for quite some time now. And, you know, people are finding out about it. It's a cool thing to see, you know, a guy like that finally get recognized and finally get his chance to go to the World Series. It's neat.
There's no doubt that the team that comes out of the American League Championship Series is going to be installed by Las Vegas as the favorite to win the World Series, because they are, you know, two of the three super teams we've talked about all year. But in the World Series, how dangerous do you think the Nationals are? And it's hard, you know, it's going to be difficult to assess the impact of this, but after a week off that they're now going to get because they took care of the Cardinals so quickly.
See, that part is tough, and I don't know. You just never actually know. I mean, I agree with the idea that, you know, the hitters being off, it does put them at a disadvantage. They do have a good offense, and in order to beat one of those two teams, they're going to need that. I will tell you this. If they end up winning the World Series, you know, my assumption would be that the starting pitching will continue on a similar path. I mean, this will be one of the greatest pitching runs in the history of our sport, I believe, because they will end up finishing against an elite level offense. You know, I think, you know, the Astros, because of the contact slug coupling, I mean, I think the Astros, if they win at all, people will start to talk about their offense as one of the greatest ever when you adjust for certain things. So I think that they're still in a tough spot. I have a hard time imagining that they'd be able to do it against the Astros or the Yankees. I think there's just too much to those lineups, but we'll see, man. We'll see. It'll be fun.
Clinton Yates, who, of course, writes for The Undefeated, like me, he's a D.C. native. He was on Freddie and Fitzsimmons last night, and he pointed something out interesting, Boo. Give a listen.
It required them to get it together and play the baseball. This team was kicking the ball around. They were having major trouble in the bullpen, obviously. It wasn't just the worst bullpen in the bigs. It wasn't just the worst bullpen in the playoffs. It was the worst bullpen in the history of major league playoffs, which is insane to think about, that they've managed to overcome that, got a couple of incredible efforts. And listen, y'all, they stomped the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
That was a full-blown beatdown. We're not talking about skating by. We're not talking about the skin of their teeth. Davey Martinez, a guy who's been much maligned, by yours truly included, because it was not together, pressed all the right buttons, his team responded, and now they're playing for it all. It's a pretty remarkable baseball story, never mind my fandom.
Yeah, the refrain from idiots like me over the last 20 years has been, and you win in the postseason with bullpens. How the heck? The Nationals in the World Series with what, during the course of the year, was at best a mediocre bullpen.
So I did make this point towards the end of the year. I remember I was on SVP, and I'm about to quote me. And he asked me, what team has the fourth best chance to win the World Series? And I said, the Nationals. And the point that I made, I said, I know everyone is going to say, you know, that bullpen's terrible, but the, you know, small sample can work in a bunch of different directions. And in small sample, sometimes historically bad bullpens could end up playing out okay. And so far, they've limited the exposure. I mean, the amount of innings pitched by non-Doolittle Hudson in that series, by non-Doolittle Hudson in that series, with, you know, not including the starters, was like, or I should say in the playoffs, was like eight, man. So, I mean, they basically pitched the entire postseason so far, wild card, division series, and LCS. They did it with the four starters, with Sanchez, Corbin, Scherzer, Strasburg, Doolittle, and Hudson. I mean, they're pitching six dudes. And then Rainey's gotten in a little bit. But for the most part, those six guys have pitched, I believe, all but eight innings in these playoffs, which is pretty incredible. So, again, in a small sample size, you can fake your way through it a little bit. That's how you can.
Yeah, they have demonstrated that. Your friend and mine, Doug Glanville, was on SportsCenter last night, and he was asked about what would be the best World Series matchup for the Nationals. Give a listen.
I like their chances more against the Yankees because the difference between even the Astros and Yankees is the starting pitching. And the absolute strength of the Nationals is the starting pitching. And you look at the weapons they have between Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin. These guys have been horses. They've thrown the majority of pitches for the entire staff. They've even come in relief for each other. Mm-hmm. And that's a smart strategy because the Washington Nationals had an epically poor bullpen in ERA through the 2019 season. Right. The strategy works in the postseason because you don't have this back-to-back games as much. You have these days off. You can rest people and roll people out.
Boog, what do you think? You agree with Doug?
I think so. I mean, I think that they will have a – I mean, I understand in the starting pitching standpoint. I still would say whichever team – I think that the question becomes, you know, can you shut down those lineups? I think it'll be – I mean, look, those lineups, those are varsity-level lineups. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know – I think that the Astros are the better team, so I would agree with Doug, but I don't feel strongly in terms of that they really would have a better chance against one of those two teams.
Yeah, and I must say, I think the Yankees would look a lot different if Edwin Encarnacion and Gary Sanchez were doing anything. There might be a different feel to it, but right now the Yankees lineup looking very mortal against what the power stuff that they're seeing from the Astros. Last one on the series that you just had. Today is Bryce Harper's birthday. He turns 27 years old today. And you can't run from this, Boog. His presence just hovered over this series, it seemed like. Because, of course, that's the conversation that they make it to the World Series in the first year after he leaves the team. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I like, and you know, people, it's something that people are gonna touch on for sure. I don't have a feel for kind of for what he's like. So most people that know him say he's the type of dude that's texting all these guys and saying, congratulations, I'm so happy for you.
Yep.
But I, you know, look, I will say, you know, for all the attention that Bryce got as a young phenom, they were able to replace Bryce Harper with Bryce Harper. They have a 20-year-old who's, you know, arguably better in Juan Soto. So for as much as people misunderstand stats like WAR, you know, the win value that people assign to an individual player is almost always overstated. How much one dude by himself can swing a win total. So I mean, I know that people are going to talk about it, but they still had a really good team. I mean, I don't know about for you, but I mean, I picked them to win the East this year. Like, I was disappointed. I felt like there were two teams at the beginning of the year that had a chance that could be great in the National League. And the Nationals were one of them. I thought the Dodgers were the other. So that was my pick.
And you know this, that next year when the Phillies play in Washington, man, Bryce is going to hear it from the fans. Like, they are going to let him know about the fact that the Nationals without him made it to the World Series. Last one for you. This is from the American League Championship Series. I don't remember instances where this really came up in the series you just did, but I know you'd love this. It's about all the pitch tipping conversation. It's about all the, you know, the stealing of information that's going on. Because I've had this feeling that this is also part of this, and A.J. Hinch gave voice to this before Game 3 last night. Give a listen.
The gamesmanship that comes with, you know, saying something on the field or trying to alter someone's view is just grown. I think it's kind of funny to see how paranoid the entire industry is on giving away their pitches, and if they don't, then they should – If they don't want to tip their pitches, then they should take consideration into doing the same thing over and over again. So human behavior is really hard.
Yeah, so I think there have been instances in the postseason where, like Tyler Glass now, it's clear that the Astros had his pitches. You knew that from Alex Bregman's swing when he got a breaking ball and seemed to be sitting on it. And then Bregman, you know Alex Bregman. There have been instances in this series in which you know, he is going up the first baseline and he's yelling or, you know, mouthing to his teammates in the dugout, get up in the box, or it's his glove. And I've had that feeling of, you know what, he's just trying to get in the head of the players on the other side because he knows the TV cameras are locked in on him. And I've thought about this because I had a former teammate of Justin Verlander tell me at one point, yeah, we do that stuff because we know Justin is totally paranoid about it. How much of that do you think goes on?
I do think today's game, what AJ said, I totally buy in on. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, the level of paranoia is gotten higher and higher. I do think that it connects with this time of replay. I do think that they're connected. They're interconnected. That's how the decoding has taken on kind of another level. And it's because of the ability to sit there in game and really go over video. Like, that's one of the things that changed this year with, you know, guys at second, and was it this year or last year where they had to put someone in the video room so that you're not allowed while they're going over a replay, whether it's challenging or something like that, to try and decode the signs so that the runner on second base can relay them in to the guy at home plate. So I think that AJ's 100% right. I think it's taken on it's gone to a whole new level. And I don't know that you're going to see it changing.
No, 100%. I mean, shoot, we had all that conversation last year when the Astros had the person in the dugout next to the photog well next to the Cleveland dugout, and you still hear stories about Team X or Team Y having a system at home in which they're relaying signs. Man, it is absolutely thick, and you're right, it happens more in the postseason because there's so much more focus, so much more replay, slow motion replay, lip reading, the whole thing. It's something that's certainly going to be a watch moving forward. Boog, thanks for doing this. I hope you feel better.
All right, brother. We'll see you, Buster.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Paul Imbakides, of course, the head honcho of the show, Get Up. At least that's what he tells us. And Hembo, I know you don't lack for opinions. And as the show has gone along this morning, a report emerged that Joe Maddon is close to a deal with the Angels. The least surprising development of this October. We've been talking about this for weeks. Jesse Rogers confirmed this for us. What do you think, Joe Maddon and the Angels? It's a natural fit, I think. And I think he and Mike Trout will really enjoy each other.
It is a natural fit, and like you said, it's probably the worst kept secret in baseball this postseason, it seems. Ever since Ausmus was let go, and as was Maddon in Chicago, it seemed like this was a fait accompli, to be candid. It will be fun to see Maddon manage the best player on the planet, because it's been a little bit of a revolving door there, and with the postseason experience that he has, and he's always done so well with teams early. Like, the way he was able to galvanize the Cubs when he first showed up, I wouldn't be surprised if he was able to do the same in LA, and especially if they're willing to spend some more money here. So I think it's the right choice for them, given his experience, given the fact that they could be on the upswing, that they're willing to spend some money. So I think this is, like you said, practically a given at this point, and I think it's a good fit for both sides.
Yeah, and some of the criticism, implied criticism maybe of Maddon in with the Cubs was that, that team eventually that won the World Series in 2016 had a lack of urgency moving forward. I think having Trout as the best player makes that easier because that guy plays hard all the time. And so I don't see that being an issue with the Angels.
No, I don't either. I don't get the sense that there was ever really that alpha male on the Cubs. I mean, they had several good players, but none of those players, as best I could tell from the outside at least, had the sort of personality drive and fire that Mike Trout does. He was extremely hungry. I mean, considering the lack of postseason success that team has lacked, obviously, since he's been there, only one series and they were swept in it. And look, Joe Maddon can't hit with men on base like his team couldn't. I mean, a lot of the things that happened there were just not his fault, and an issue with the front office, the development, especially in terms of their inability to develop pitching.
All right, let's get to your notes. Gerrit Cole yesterday was, against an experienced Yankees lineup, was one of the worst versions of Gerrit Cole in 2019, and yet this is what distinguishes great pitchers. He hung in there.
He did. I find myself in awe watching him build throughout the game, but that's really been the case all season long, Buster, including the postseason. Cole has faced 84 batters after the sixth inning and struck out 40 of them. That strikeout rate of 48% is by far the highest among starters to face at least 40 batters in those situations. Opposing hitters are batting 117. That's 9 for 77 against Cole after the sixth inning, also the best mark among that group of starters. But perhaps most impressively, Cole has thrown 10 100-mile-per-hour pitches in the seventh inning or later, including yesterday. He threw one. All other starters in baseball combined for two this season.
We talked with a legend, Boog Sciambi, about the National Series. What was your take on that?
Well, first, their pitchers utterly dominated the first time through the order. The Cardinals went 2 for 38 with 20 strikeouts against two walks in the first three innings of the NLCS. Washington outscored St. Louis 13-0 in innings 1 through 3. Secondly, they thrived in the box with two outs. The Nats batted 340 with two outs against the Cardinals, the highest average for a team in a seven-game series since the Red Sox in the 2007 World Series. 11 of the 20 runs they scored in the series came with two outs.
All right. When Didi Gregorius's fly ball wound up falling in the warning track at Yankee Stadium last night, it fueled all the conversation about the baseball and how it's flying. What happened to the year of the home run?
So home runs were the story of the regular season, but it's become clear that the hitting environment this postseason is much less favorable. The home run rate is down, as is the average fly ball distance, but perhaps the most telling indicator of offensive suppression comes from StatCast. Buster, in the regular season, 53% of batted balls with an exit velocity of 100 plus miles per hour and a launch angle of 30 degrees resulted in a home run. Again, 53%. That number this postseason is down to 35%. You can attribute it to weather to an extent in some places, but that is a significant gap for batted balls that typically result in home runs.
Yeah, right. All the metrics with the swings being the same, but the results not being the same. And through the years when I've covered baseball, players have told me the balls feel different for the special events, for the All-Star game, for the home run derby, certainly, and in the postseason. It's not unusual. If the baseball's different, that would not be.
And it makes me think that the Nationals have a potential advantage in the World Series then, because only about 1 in 3 of their runs this postseason have been scored via the home run. The Astros and the Yankees are much more home run reliant. Just something to keep in mind as we move forward.
Absolutely. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
So after Game 3 of the American League Championship Series, I caught up with Josh Reddick, and one of the things that I asked him about was the reaction of the fans at Yankee Stadium. The call went against the Yankees late in the game upon replay, and stuff started getting thrown out of the stands. Give a listen to Josh Reddick after Game 3.
Josh, Gerrit Cole, a lot of traffic, no runs. What'd you see in him tonight?
Standard Gerrit Cole for us. You know, I think we've got 16, 17 starts right now for him in a row, where he's just been unstoppable, been a wrecking force for us. So we don't expect anything less from him, and he did a fantastic job tonight.
From your perspective, describe that Didi Gregorius fly ball in the fifth inning with two runners on base.
Panic. Immediate panic. Anything that goes up in the air to here to right, as we all know, has a good chance of getting out here. But, man, I think I got a lot of silence in my head whenever the ball started coming down, and I realized that it wasn't going to go out. So panic, but then a huge relief right at the end.
You jump Severino, second inning, hit a home run. Tell me about that.
Oh, just, you know, trying to battle. I had 2-strike count, just trying to shoot the ball the other way with a fastball. Got a hanging slider, didn't try to do too much with it, as I have been here in the last week. Been swinging the bat way too hard, made some adjustments today, and, you know, I only just swing hard to hit it out, especially here.
We saw some debris come on the field, craziness. What was it like to play in this game with the fans?
Oh, they're hectic. You know, that's a nice way of putting it right now, but, you know, stuff like that really doesn't belong in baseball. Throwing stuff on the field, it's kind of disrespectful, so it's kind of tough to deal with, especially when stuff like that happens, but you deal with it, you move on. The win here is the bigger statement.
Marley Rivera has covered the Yankees in this postseason for ESPN. And Marley, we start with this. As you and I talk, it's about 9:30 on Wednesday morning. Game 4 has not been postponed by Major League Baseball. But as you know, the weather forecast is absolutely terrible, to the degree that you were tweeting out yesterday about how the players have already been told that this game is likely to be postponed today, which makes complete sense. The weather forecast isn't great for Thursday, but it's better. If, in fact, this is what happens, if there is a postponement, these two teams potentially could play 4 straight days. They would have to play Thursday, Friday at Yankee Stadium. If the series was extended, they would then play Saturday and Sunday in Houston. I've said I really feel like that could favor the Astros because the Yankees are so reliant on their bullpen and they potentially would be taxed four straight days. What's your read on it?
Absolutely, Buster. I think you're right on the, you know, in the exact right track, especially is the fact that this bullpen, even though it's extremely rested and hardly had any work, especially those top five arms in the bullpen in September, at the same time, they also went almost the entire season never playing three back-to-back games. I was actually talking to Chad Green and Zach Britton and Adam Ottavino, obviously, with a terrible postseason about it last night. And one of the lines that Chad did say was, you know what, Marley? We play back-to-back-to-back games all the time. So it isn't a consideration. We actually feel fine. But they haven't been tested, and we saw it last night, Buster. If the Yankees' bullpen is not up to par, I mean, if the starters don't give them the distance, it certainly is an advantage for the Astros.
Yeah, I was in the Yankees clubhouse last night like you were, and you could just see in the face of Adam Ottavino, he is totally perplexed about why he struggled. And look, I thought about this. You know, the Yankees came into the postseason, and rightly so, we were touting how great their bullpen has been. But if you're going to run a relay team of relievers and you have one guy who's constantly dropping the baton, it's going to be a problem. And that guy in this postseason has been Adam.
Absolutely. In 1 1/3 innings, giving up 3 earned runs. We know he blew a save. We know he gave up that one home run. And like you said, but the one thing to Adam's credit, Buster, and you and I have done this for a long time, to stand up there and answer every single question about everything and answer with honesty, I really appreciated that. I haven't seen that in a while in the postseason, and it was good to see that he stood there. But then again, taking responsibility doesn't do any good for the Yankees if you're not performing up to par.
You got the sense in talking with guys like Didi Gregorius and Aaron Judge and Aaron Hicks, they are completely perplexed and frustrated by what's gone on in games 2 and 3. They've left 16 runners on base against two of the best pitchers in the world, maybe the best two best pitchers in the world, Verlander game 2, Gerrit Cole in game 3. They had their opportunities, and they just could not get it done.
Oh, absolutely. And you can see the difference, Buster. In the divisional series, right, the Yankees had 16 RBI with men on base. Right, and they hit over 300. What's the difference in the divisional series? They face the Minnesota Twins pitchers, right? And then here, you just talked about the advantage that the Astros have. The Cole game and the Verlander game, which were the top games that the Astros knew they needed to win, and they did. The Yankees did not. And did they have their chances? God, did they. I mean, they had so many opportunities. It was amazing. I mean, at one point, they put 2 or more runners on base on 4 out of 5 innings against Gerrit Cole. But what's amazing about that, and one thing that I will give credit to all the Yankees hitters in terms of, I mean, Didi Gregorius said, this was on me. I left 5 men on base. Yeah. I lost this game. And it isn't a one-man show, right? Like, no one performed when it really, really mattered. But the credit that I will give them is them giving credit to Gerrit Cole. That's exactly what top elite pitchers do. And I think that it's great to win games and perform incredibly and strike out 20 when you have your best stuff, right? We're used to seeing that. But when you don't, when you have a night where you give up more bases on balls than hits, and you still come out with the win against that kind of lineup and that kind of power at Yankee Stadium being abused by the fans, I have great admiration for what Gerrit Cole accomplished last night.
Yeah, he maintained an equilibrium through these kind of crazy set of circumstances. You mentioned pitching in Yankee Stadium. It's a playoff game. He had the home plate umpire had to leave for 15 minutes. the game is delayed. It was a long game. There were long half innings. And yet, despite his struggles, he was able to find his way through. One guy who hasn't found his way through lately, my goodness, Gary Sanchez looks terrible. He has really struggled at the plate. And you know, as I watched that last night and he had that terrible wild pitch where he didn't move to block the ball, through the years, I've always heard managers and coaches assess catchers by saying, boy, you hope they can separate their defense from their offense. I wonder if his frustration on the offensive end is seeping over into his defense watching that last night. What do you think?
I think that's maybe a little bit. I mean, we haven't seen the same Gary Sanchez since the middle of September. It happened exactly on September 11th when he re-injured that groin trying to go for that, stolen base in Detroit. We have not seen him at the plate the same way. He had a shortened rehab. He would have had, you know, a longer IL stint. It didn't mean that, you know, that the postseason was upon them. So obviously that's still not 100%, and it is affecting his swing. But the one thing that I will say – Buster, and I have seen it all season from Gary Sanchez, and I've seen it most of the postseason, and I know that people didn't notice because he performed well, is that his improvements in defense are remarkable. I mean, it was a really, really bad timing. It was a ball that needed to be stopped, and Gary Sanchez stood up there and said, I have stopped that ball all season, and I did not when it mattered the most. So he took responsibility, but the growth that he had made on defense has been, he's made strides. Now, it doesn't matter if you made strides when you don't make it, you know, in the top moment when it matters, when you don't perform.
He's gotten to the point, his struggles offensively, where if I were in Aaron Boone's shoes, I would think seriously about playing Austin Romine behind the plate tonight, because I just did this moment.
Yeah, we asked him, Buster, you know that, and Aaron was categorical about it. Aaron said, no, have you considered, you know, like using Romine? He's like, Gary Sanchez is my starting catcher. I understand what you mean, and obviously Austin is considered a better defensive catcher than Gary is, but no, Aaron Boone says this is my guy.
100%. All right, Marley. Yeah. I'm not sure when I'll see you next. Well, that depends a lot on Major League Baseball today, because I think a lot of people will be staying home. We'll just have to wait and see. Thank you.
Thank you, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, an exciting day of baseball here. Let's get to some tweets. First one comes from Vince at Not to Fake Vin. Have you ever seen a playoff run like what the Nationals are doing? They beat the Brewers, the NL's best Dodgers, and sweeping the red-hot Cardinals.
Yeah, I think the 2003 Marlins would be a good comp. You know, that was a team early in the year. They were struggling. There was talk about them having a sell-off. And they called up a 19-year-old infielder who they stationed in the outfield eventually, Miguel Cabrera. And they wound up winning the World Series, beating the Yankees in six games. The final game, Josh Beckett dominating in Yankee Stadium. That's the comp for me.
Yeah, that was a heck of a roster. I remember that series really well.
Yep.
Next one comes from Carlos Munoz at Carlos Almighty. How does Marcelo Zuna do in the free agent market, and what sort of contract does he get? Can't see many fits for him with how teams value defense and the ample supply of power that's out there.
Carlos, I think you're right. I don't think it was a good showcase year for him. Hit .243 in the regular season, 29 home runs, which, Troy, I think you would agree with me. When you see the number 29 home runs, it feels like saying someone hit 15.
Yeah, that's weak.
In a normal year. He turns 29, and it's interesting. I was looking at the defensive metrics this morning. They weren't that bad, actually. He was, you know, positive in defensive run saves, but I don't think that matches the eye test. I mean, he is defensively challenged. I do wonder if next year he's going to have to rebuild his value.
Next one from Ghost of Taos Hill at Taos Hill MMP. Hey, Buster, do you still think the Yankees' bullpen, which indeed is better, is the difference maker in the ALCS? Astros have hit them well historically and currently, and the Houston bullpen is good in its own right.
Yeah, and Troy, back me up here. I get it, because I talked up and other people did the Yankees' bullpen coming into the series. I picked the Astros. Like, I picked the Astros back in the wintertime to win the World Series. I thought they would. What I said at the beginning of the series was, the Yankees are going to win the series. They needed to seize control in the first four games, and that hasn't happened. And Ghost, to your point, the bullpen has not performed. Adam Ottavino has been a real disappointment so far in the postseason. 16 batters faced, 6 hits, and 3 walks.
Eesh. Next one from Brian Caprino at Dino Caprino. With all the legal issues facing the Angels, do you think this will scare off a lot of free agents they might be targeting, or even Joe Maddon? Seems like a less desirable place to play now.
No, Brian, I don't think it'll be a factor at all. It's kind of like when ownership changes and people wonder, hey, what do the players think? They don't care. In the end, if the Angels make the best offer to Gerrit Cole, I think he'll sign with them.
Final one from Alex Hannes at @A_Hannes. Since ESPN is the new training ground for MLB managerial positions, which of the 30 teams would you want to manage for a day, and why?
You know what? I'll go back to my childhood roots. I was a big Dodger fan as a kid. I'd say the Dodgers. You love the roster. Dave Roberts told us in the podcast earlier this summer that he has real buy-in on how they do things. You know, if you could have that group for the next 5 years, that would be pretty good. What about you, Troy? I mean, you're going to say the Rangers in the new ballpark?
That's a good cover-up for you. Sure, I'll go to L.A. with the team with all the money and the nice weather. Come on, you can do better than that.
Yes! What do you want me to pick? The Mariners?
Yeah,
come on.
Actually, yes, I do want to go be the Mariners, you know, because I'm from Seattle.
Really?
I love
and you get fired next year.
Thank you for the tweets this morning. Use the hashtag BleacherTweets every day, and even though baseball season is ending, another season is beginning, basketball season. So we've got some great podcasts for you. The Woj Pod, The Low Post. Check them out wherever you get your podcasts.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Marley Rivera, to Paul Mbakides, to Boog Shami, to Troy Farkas, who after the podcast is going to go up and read all about the Great Depression. Right, Troy?
Right, Buster. Can't wait.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.